The hits.
Sí, eso.
Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute show of news and features is designed especially for people learning English. We speak slowly, using a simple style and a limited vocabulary. Today on the program, Jill Robbins and Gregory Stockel bring us Ask a Teacher. We close the show with American Story, The Birthmark by Nathaniel Hawthorne. But first, we have this report from Susan Shand.
Eleazar Hernandez slept on the side of a road in the light rain as the weather turned cold. The 23-year-old Venezuelan was trying to get to the Colombian city of Medellin with his wife. She is 7 months pregnant. They had no money for transportation by the time they reached the small town of Pamplona, about 480 kilometers away from Medellin. Hernandez hoped to get a ride on the back of a truck to cross the Paramo de Berlin, an area high in the mountains. "My wife can barely walk," said Hernandez. "We need transport to get us out of here," he added. The Associated Press, AP, reports the two spent 4 days sleeping on Pamplona's sidewalks. Venezuelans are again fleeing their nation's economic and humanitarian disaster. The disease COVID-19 and measures to slow its spread halted one of the world's biggest migration movements. Venezuelans are going to Colombia to escape an economy where many people earn less than $2 a month. The number of people leaving is smaller than before, but Colombian immigration officials expect 200,000 Venezuelans to enter the country in the next few months. In Colombia, there is the chance for them to find work, which will allow them to send money back to feed their families. The new migrants are finding conditions worse than those who fled Venezuela before COVID-19. Many shelters remain closed. Colombians fearing infection are less likely to help with food donations, and drivers are less likely to pick up hitchhikers. "We hardly got any lifts along the way," said Ana Hirmontilla. She is a cook from the Venezuelan state of Guarico. Montilla spoke with the AP as she was nearing Bogota, Colombia's capital, after traveling with her family for 27 days. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, over 5 million Venezuelans had left their country, notes the United Nations. The poorest simply walked. As governments across South America took action in hopes of stopping the spread of COVID-19, many migrants found themselves without work. Over 100,000 Venezuelans returned to their country, where at least they could live with family members. Today, official land and bridge crossings between the two countries are still closed. Migrants are forced to cross the border illegally, where the roads are controlled by drug traffickers and rebel organizations like the National Liberation Army. The return of Venezuelan migrants is already happening, even though the border is closed, said Ana Milena Guerrero. She is an official for the International Rescue Committee, a humanitarian nonprofit organization helping migrants. Many Venezuelans are now forced to walk within their own country for days to reach the border because of fuel shortages. Hernandez said it took him 7 days to walk from his hometown of Los Teques, Venezuela, to Colombia. I can't allow my daughter to be born in a place where she might have to go to bed hungry, he said. Once the migrants arrive in Colombia, they face new problems. Colombia's rate of unemployment rose from 12% in March to almost 16% in August. Those who cannot pay for rental housing are being pushed out of their homes. More than 50% of all Venezuelans in Colombia are living there illegally and have no legal protection. I'm Susan Shand.
The New York Philharmonic made the historic decision this week to cancel its entire performance season. The president of the famed symphony orchestra, Deborah Borda, said on Tuesday that it had lost a combined $30 million in ticket sales for this season and next. The orchestra's total budget for the 2019-2020 season is $87 million. Borda said the company raised more money than expected from individual donors. But that money cannot make up for those massive amounts of lost ticket revenue, she said, because we live on earned ticket revenue. The New York Philharmonic is the oldest orchestra in the United States, at 178 years old. It is part of the country's so-called Big Five symphonies. It has continued its performance seasons through crises including the Civil War, Great Depression, the September 11th terror attacks, and even other disease outbreaks. But the spread of the new coronavirus and restrictions related to it has brought the organization to its breaking point. The full Philharmonic has not performed since March 10th. It announced on June 10th that it had canceled the autumn part of the 2021 season and would restart normal performances in early January. About 70 Philharmonic support employees have lost their jobs. Orchestra musicians have seen pay cuts of 25%. Some have continued to perform in less formal settings. At the end of August, the orchestra launched New York Phil Bandwagon, a series of socially distanced outdoor performances. The bandwagon itself is a bright red Ford truck. It holds a sound system, music stands, lights, and an operations crew. The musicians follow it in another vehicle. Fiona Simon plays the violin for the Philharmonic. She took part in a day of outdoor shows this month. She said the experience returned to her a sense of purpose, something she had not felt since indoor shows stopped in March. You're not a complete musician if you're just playing for yourself, Simon said. She and a few other Philharmonic musicians played at three different street corners that day. The first show took place near a Bronx school. The second was held outside a public library in Queens. The final show took place in a Brooklyn green space. As the group began its final performance of the day, singer Anthony Roth Costanzo opened the show, standing in the open back of the bandwagon. "We're going to play you a little concert," he said, as people began to gather around in the warmth of an early autumn sunset. The show lasted 20 minutes and included famous songs by George Gershwin and Charlie Parker. As the audience grew, it became clear that the concert was as much an emotional release for the crowd as it was for the musicians. Violinist Curtis Stewart, a guest performer, expressed it this way: "We need a place to put our feelings. We need a place to feel safe," he said. "You don't know what you've got until it's gone." The Philharmonic is holding its final 2020 bandwagon concert this weekend. It plans to restart the program next spring. On the New York Philharmonic's website, President Borda expressed her hope for a return to full orchestra shows. "We cannot wait to be reunited with you, our audience, and we look forward to sharing that magical moment when you hear the very first downbeat of a New York Philharmonic concert."
Today, we answer a question from Brigitte in France. She writes,
"Could you tell me when to use little and when to use small? Thank you."
Dear Brigitte, thank you for writing to us. The words little and small may seem to have the same meaning, but they do have different uses. First, we can look at them separately. We use little to talk about a small or unimportant amount of something. For example,
"There is a little dirt on the floor."
You can also use little to describe someone who is young, as in this example:
"The little girls laughed at the dog." Note that when the article "a" is placed before little, it means you do have some amount of a thing.
She has a little experience with political campaigns.
But without the article, little means you are lacking or missing something.
I have little need for swimwear in the winter.
There is an important difference between the words little and small. The difference is, when describing an amount, we use little. But when describing the size of someone or something, we use small. Here's an example:
"The airplane seats are only a good fit for small adults."
Another different use of small is when comparing one thing with another.
"My new phone is smaller than the old one." It is not correct to compare amounts with the word little. In spoken English, people add the ending EST to little when comparing sizes. The word littlest is often used when describing something cute and very small.
"That is the littlest puppy I have ever seen."
I hope that helps to answer your question, Brigitte. And that's Ask a Teacher.
What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Greg Stockel.
Our story today is called The Birthmark. It was written by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Here is Barbara Klein with the story.
A long time ago, there lived a skillful scientist who had experienced a spiritual reaction more striking than any chemical one. He had left his laboratory in the care of his assistant, washed the chemicals from his hands, and asked a beautiful woman to become his wife. In those days, new scientific discoveries, such as electricity, seemed to open paths into the area of miracles. It was not unusual for the love of science to compete with the love of a woman. The scientist's name was Aylmer. He had so totally given himself to scientific studies that he could not be weakened by a second love. His love for his young wife could only be the stronger of the two if it could link itself with his love of science. Such a union did take place, with truly remarkable results. But one day, very soon after their marriage, Aylmer looked at his wife with a troubled expression. "Georgiana," he said, "have you ever considered that the mark upon your cheek might be removed?" "No," she said, smiling. But seeing the seriousness of his question, she said, "The mark has so often been called a charm that I was simple enough to imagine it might be so." "On another face it might," answered her husband, "but not on yours. No, dear, nature made you so perfectly that this small defect shocks me as being a sign of earthly imperfection." "Shocks you?" cried Georgiana, deeply hurt. Her face reddened, and she burst into tears. "Then why did you marry me? You cannot love what shocks you." We must explain that in the center of Georgiana's left cheek, there was a mark, deep in her skin. The mark was usually a deep red color. When Georgiana blushed, the mark became less visible. But when she turned pale, there was the mark, like a red stain upon snow. The birthmark would come and go with the emotions in her heart. The mark was shaped like a very small human hand. Georgiana's past lovers used to say that the hand of a magical fairy had touched her face when she was born. Many a gentleman would have risked his life for the honor of kissing that mysterious hand. But other people had different opinions. Some women said the red hand quite destroyed the effect of Georgiana's beauty. Male observers who did not praise the mark simply wished it away so that they did not see it. After his marriage, Aylmer discovered that this was the case with himself. Had Georgiana been less beautiful, he might have felt his love increased by the prettiness of that little hand. But because she was otherwise so perfect, he found the mark had become unbearable. Aylmer saw the mark as a sign of his wife's eventual sadness, sickness, and death. Soon, the birthmark caused him more pain than Georgiana's beauty had ever given him pleasure. During a period that should have been their happiest, Aylmer could only think of this disastrous subject. With the morning light, Aylmer opened his eyes upon his wife's face and recognized the sign of imperfection. When they sat together in the evening near the fire, he would look at the mark. Georgiana soon began to fear his look. His expression would make her face go pale, and the birthmark would stand out like a red jewel on white stone. "Do you remember, dear Aylmer, about the dream you had last night about this hateful mark?" she asked with a weak smile.
"None! None whatever!" answered Aylmer, surprised.
The mind is in a sad state when sleep cannot control its ghosts and allows them to break free with their secrets. Aylmer now remembered his dream. He had imagined himself with his assistant, Aminadab, trying to remove the birthmark with an operation. But the deeper his knife went, the deeper the small hand sank until it had caught hold of Georgiana's heart. Aylmer felt guilty remembering the dream. "Aylmer," said Georgiana, "I do not know what the cost would be to both of us to remove this birthmark. Removing it could deform my face or damage my health."
"Dearest Georgiana, I have spent much thought on the subject," said Aylmer. "I am sure it can be removed."
"Then let the attempt be made at any risk," said Georgiana. "Life is not worth living while this hateful mark makes me the object of your horror. You have deep science and have made great discoveries. Remove this little mark for the sake of your peace and my own."
"Dearest wife," cried Aylmer, "do not doubt my power. I am ready to make this cheek as perfect as its pair."
Her husband gently kissed her right cheek, the one without the red hand. The next day, the couple went to Aylmer's laboratory, where he had made all his famous discoveries. Georgiana would live in a beautiful room he had prepared nearby, while he worked tirelessly in his lab. One by one, Aylmer tried a series of powerful experiments on his wife, but the mark remained. Georgiana waited in her room. She read through his notebooks of scientific observations. She could not help see that many of his experiments had ended in failure. She decided to see for herself the scientist at work. The first thing that struck Georgiana when entering the laboratory was the hot furnace. From the amount of soot above it, it seemed to have been burning for ages. She saw machines, tubes, cylinders, and other containers for chemical experiments. What most drew her attention was Aylmer himself. He was nervous and pale as death as he worked on preparing a liquid. Georgiana realized that her husband had been hiding his tension and fear. "Think not so little of me that you cannot be honest about the risks we are taking," she said. "I will drink whatever you make for me, even if it is a poison."
"My dear, nothing shall be hidden," Aylmer said. "I have already given you chemicals powerful enough to change your entire physical system. Only one thing remains to be tried, and if that fails, we are ruined."
He led her back to her room, where she waited once more, alone with her thoughts. She hoped that for just one moment she could satisfy her husband's highest ideals, but she realized then that his mind would forever be on the march, always requiring something newer, better, and more perfect. Hours later, Aylmer returned carrying a crystal glass with a colorless liquid.
"The chemical process went perfectly," he said. "Unless all my science has tricked me, it cannot fail."
To test the liquid, he placed a drop in the soil of a dying flower growing in a pot in the room. In a few moments, the plant became healthy and green once more.
"I do not need proof," Georgiana said quietly. "Give me the glass. I'm happy to put my life in your hands."
She drank the liquid and immediately fell asleep. Aylmer sat next to his wife, observing her and taking notes. He noted everything: her breathing, the movement of an eyelid. He stared at the birthmark. And slowly, with every breath that came and went, it lost some of its brightness.
"By heaven, it's nearly gone," said Aylmer. "Success! Success!"
He opened the window coverings to see her face in daylight. She was so pale. Georgiana opened her eyes and looked into the mirror her husband held. She tried to smile as she saw the barely visible mark.
"My poor Aylmer," she said gently. "You have aimed so high. With so high and pure a feeling, you have rejected the best the earth could offer. I am dying, dearest."
It was true. The hand on her face had been her link to life. As the last trace of color disappeared from her cheek, she gave her last breath. Blinded by a meaningless imperfection and an impossible goal, Aylmer had thrown away her life, and with it, his chance for happiness. In trying to improve his lovely wife, he had failed to realize she had been perfect all along.
The Birthmark was written by Nathaniel Hawthorne. It was adapted and produced by Dana Demange. Your storyteller was Barbara Klein.
And that's our show. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with another Learning English program on the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Katie Weaver.